If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Microbrew, an off-season edition Milwaukee Brewers chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I work at the Journal Sentinel. So does Kurt Hoge. He is my colleague. He covers the Milwaukee Brewers, and he is right over there across from me. Well, actually, not physically across from me, but on the other line. And we got a newsy day, November 6th, newsy day in Milwaukee Brewers off season. This is the day where qualifying offers get announced. It's the deadline for options getting picked up. The Brewers have made some of those already as we record this. There are some things we don't know yet that we'll have to confess, and we can try to break them down as best we can. But there is one bit of interesting news, really interesting news, and that is the announcement Monday afternoon that the bench coach or associate manager, whatever you prefer, I think associate manager is technically correct, Ricky Weeks, transitioning out of that role and is going to move more into a front office job. He had kind of served in that role before he became Pat Murphy's number two on the bench over the last couple of years, and now he's moving on. You had even speculated, Kurt, you know, would he be a candidate to take a head managerial role somewhere else? Is he the heir apparent if Pat Murphy ever decides to hang them up? We presume Pat Murphy's about to win his second straight Manager of the Year award. Things have gone very well for him so far. I don't know if the immediate end is on the horizon, but this is an interesting development. I want to know what you think of this because that surprises me. Also, they're not going to replace him. That's the understanding as well. So that's also surprising. Tell me everything you think on this front.
I'm not entirely shocked that Ricky Weeks is taking on a different role simply because he's got a young family. It's not the role Jace Peterson was in, but similar to what we saw Jace Peterson do last year, it's a role that's going to fit with basically, you know, his family and his life better. I don't know if that's entirely why he took it, but it's never going to be a huge surprise for me when a former player who's got young kids takes a front office advisory role where he can spend more time with them. What I am surprised by is that they're not replacing the position. Not having a direct bench coach is interesting to me. I don't know what better word to describe it, simply because coaching staffs are getting bigger.
Yes. There's three and hitting coaches.
Bench coach, like, I don't know when bench coaches first started, but ever since I've been around, every single team has had a bench coach. So look, the Brewers are saying that these roles, that basically the job of the bench coach is going to be scattered to various roles. And they have some guys on staff, as we mentioned, staffs are getting bigger. Their staff has been getting bigger that have sort of taken on some of these roles with, you know, Evan Martin does a lot of the game planning on the offensive side as the game is going, the strategy there. On the pitching side, Daniel DeMondesert, who also serves as the translator, does some of the, like, a lot of the opponent scouting and, like, the game planning there as well. So it's not like there's people that can't fill it, but I am going to be interested to see what hole gets left by not having Ricky Weeks there, because he, like, ultimately the work that Ricky did before taking this job was very evident. His knack for blending, like, the player side and also the scouting side and also the analytics side. I don't know if when he was a player, if the people that covered him would have ever seen him as that guy, but he kind of was able to balance all the information, all the stuff. And he's still with the org. He will still have an impact. I think it's interesting that he's going to be, you know, an assistant involved in scouting as well. But yeah, those are my thoughts at this surprising news.
Chris Hook is really important as the pitching coach. And
yes. I think the number one.
Of course, that's probably true of a lot of pitching coaches, that they have a very outsized role in decision-making, not just, you know, checking a guy's mechanics. And there are other guys, like you said, who fit that bill. There are multiple hitting coaches. They probably have a fair amount of advisory, advisory skill to them as well, even the base coaches. But, usually teams do have that number two, like basically that like second pair of eyes and ears is just supposed to be like the guy who helps the manager along. I certainly didn't get any sense that there was any conflict between Pat Murphy and Ricky Weeks or any inkling that, you know, and maybe it isn't about Weeks as much as just the position of the bench coach, since this makes sense for Weeks if he's got a young family to want a job that's a little bit less demanding of his time. But it strikes me that Pat Murphy is a guy who could use a bench coach, you know, like sometimes, and he's talked about it. He's pretty open about his process and his decision-making. And, you know, he seems to, I think, be pretty open-minded about stuff, but like, that's, I don't know. Did you get a sense there was any sort of conflict or any reason why they decided that they wanted to sort of do away with that position? It's probably something that's hard to tell from the outside anyway.
No, I never got a sense of conflict really. This last year specifically, really anywhere on the coaching staff, I'm trying to rack my brain for just weird things that notice and not. Yeah. I mean, they're two very strong personalities, and I think they definitely can bring their own perspective to the game. And I don't know if those are necessarily like contrasting perspectives, but it's going to be interesting because look, after the games. You know, when we're waiting to go into Pat Murphy's office to speak to him, like especially on the road, the meeting that we're waiting to basically end in his office is always, it's the manager, whatever front office member is traveling on the road, whether it's Matt Arnold, Matt Klein, Will Hudgens, whoever it may be, and Ricky Weeks. It's those three. So I don't know if someone else is going to presume like that duty, because that is the associate manager at play, is being in on those discussions. And it's not just the bench coach. You're not just doing strategy in the game. There's more at play. But maybe, I don't know, maybe with just how involved front offices are in the day-to-day stuff now, it'll be seamless and not noticed. But this is definitely something to pay attention to. This just simply not having a bench coach, not having an associate manager, no liaison. I guess there are some other liaisons to the front office and the coaching staff, but it'll be worth monitoring for sure. I'm not sure exactly if it's worth freaking out about now, but it's worth paying attention to just to see what changes come about.
Right. And it's November 6th. You know, there's a really good chance they change their minds or, you know, have adjustments or figure out a different hierarchy flow chart. And like you said, there's so many cooks in the kitchen. I guess I wouldn't be super concerned about it. I just thought Ricky Weeks was going to be the next manager of the Brewers when Pat Murphy decided to hang them up. I don't have a sense for when that would be. That could be a decade from now. It could be next year. I have no idea with him because, you know, he is just where he's at in his career. And I thought Ricky Weeks would be there, but maybe not. He's going to move now into a different role. Those roles have been more interchangeable in recent years. The best example, of course, Craig Counsell came out of the front office to become manager. Ray Montgomery, who is the manager with the Angels, formerly in the Brewers front office. Like, these things are not, you know, it's not an either or situation. So it doesn't mean it's the end of the line for Ricky Weeks as a field coach or field manager or anything like that. One thing we don't know, is one of the biggest roster decisions facing the Brewers this offseason, and that is what happens with Brandon Woodruff. We know that Brandon Woodruff has declined his half of the mutual option that would have paid him $20 million next year to be a pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. Instead, the Brewers pay him a $10 million buyout, And now, now comes a different decision. This is what we don't have. What you probably already know as you're listening to this is whether or not the Brewers extended him a qualifying offer. Very brief understanding of what that is it's a average of the top salaries in baseball. It's $22 million. They would be offering him a one-year deal worth $22 million. He can take it, or he can leave it and then become a free agent. Why that matters for the Brewers is by making that qualifying offer, they would guarantee themselves draft compensation if Woodruff signs for a lucrative deal elsewhere. How lucrative that deal is often relates to how good the compensation is. You know, makes sense. Oh, he was a high in demand free agent. You deserve compensation for losing him. The Brewers as a team that gets revenue sharing has a little more advantage on this front. It's a little complicated, but would the Brewers want him here for $22 million? Because if they offer that qualifying offer, there is the risk, I guess risk in quotes, because I think Brandon Woodruff is a perfectly capable pitcher if he's healthy, the risk that he takes it and that throws off their budget a little bit. So the question is, will they offer it? And the other question is, will Brandon Woodruff take it? It's unclear to me what his market is, a guy who is pretty dang good, but coming off of, you know, multiple injuries at this point that I think have to cast a pall on what you think he can do going forward in 2026 and beyond. So again, I ask you, Kurt, what do you think about this whole thing? Where do you stand on what you think the Brewers will do? And I guess because that decision has already happened as people are listening to this, what are the pros and cons of both?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spend too much time hypothesizing whether Brewers are going to do something or not do something that we'll find out about in very short time here. But maybe like I want to talk more about Brandon Woodruff's market, because like you said, it can be a difficult one. To figure out. And the more that I look at what his market could be and the possibilities there, the more that paying him $22 million for 1 year, look, it's more than I think any team would be comfortable paying him for a single season, but not that much more for 1 year and relatively low risk that given the upside, quote in quotes, of also getting a comp pick back if he declines it and signs elsewhere, that's something that's worth doing. It's like you said, his market's super interesting this year, but it's not just his market too, right? The starting pitching market has been pretty robust in recent years. Like the top end hitters are still getting the insane amounts of money, the Kyle Tuckers, like Bo Bichette's going to get a pretty big deal this offseason.
Even though both of those guys have injury history too.
Correct. So it's those top guys, but then like the middle tier kind of doesn't get that. Whereas if you are in the middle tier of starting pitching, get ready to make some money, buddy. It's not great to be Jorge Polanco, but if you are, I don't know, Ranger Suarez is probably still on the higher end, but
Merrill Kelly.
Yeah, that's a great one. Merrill Kelly, you're going to get at least $15 million a year. Maybe he's older, so maybe not multiple years, but like just to eat innings. And Brandon Woodruff's a better pitcher than Merrill Kelly. Now there's questions about the eating innings part, and that's what's going to diminish his market a little bit, but, He's going to be set to make somewhere in the six, I would think, 15 to 19, 20-ish million a year. You get into an interesting area of the debate when you're like, oh, how many years is someone to give him? Like, is someone going to give him 3 years? I'm not sure the Brewers give him 3 years. Someone gave him 4 years? I don't think anyone does. So that's sort of where his market is at, and the Brewers could re-sign him. Like they could try to go like 2 years, $32 million, and that's going to be better for them than at least financially than the qualifying offer would be. But ultimately, I do think it would make sense to extend him that qualifying offer. It's just a matter of, that's not something the Brewers do much when there's uncertainty if the player, not only uncertainty if the player will take it, but like uncertainty if he's going to be worth $22 million. And here's the other part of it too. The Brewers, I think, going into his free agency, not I think. We know the Brewers going into his free agency are far more comfortable with their understanding of his medicals and have had communication with the doctor who performed his surgery way more than any other team. I don't know if that leads to like less money, them offering him less or them offering him more, but whatever their process is with him, they have a deeper understanding of what to expect.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to point that out, put a finer point on it, extending him or not extending him the qualifying offer, the information that we probably already have as you're listening to this does not change that there are still decisions for Brandon Woodruff. Like, would the Brewers try to sign him to a deal and as free agency? I would do the one year, $22 million thing in a heartbeat, but and we probably, I don't know if we'll have time to talk about how I absolutely still feel the Los Angeles Dodgers won the World Series because they have an exorbitant payroll, but the Brewers do not operate like that. They do not operate like one of the 10 halves in Major League Baseball. 10 is a generous number, I feel, and can afford a 1 year, $22 million deal on a guy who's a question mark, even though it is just 1 year. Now, I still think the Brewers should offer him that. I do think he'll get a multi-year deal. I think it'll probably be as high as 3 years. And I think the Brewers would stand to gain something. And if it's Brandon Woodruff, that's great.
So here's what's interesting. Here's another interesting, I think, angle of the Woodruff Brewers offseason dance. If they're going to trade Freddie Peralta, which indications lean in that direction, certainly right now, who do you get to replace him? Because yeah. Maybe you just waited, you do the waiting game and get Jose Quintana, but next year's Jose Quintana for $5-6 million again. That's probably the answer. But like, I'm just looking at these Fangraphs projections for pitchers. Chris Bassitt, 1 year, $17 million. Lucas Giolito, 2 years, $28 million. Damn. I would much rather. I know there's risk with Brandon Woodruff's shoulder, but I saw the man pitching at 91 to 93 with his fastball and striking guys out, not getting walks, and being a really good pitcher. Like his results were, it was not smoke and mirrors. It may seem a little smoke and mirrorsy because he didn't throw 96. But you look at all his peripherals, all the underlying stuff, like he was just a really good pitcher. So if you can get a guy who had like an xERA of 3.2 with that stuff, and you're like, okay, well, maybe there's a little bit better tick of the stuff. Like, there's risk involved, sure. But find me on the market this year that doesn't have lots of risk. The number one starting pitcher is Dylan Cease. You don't think Dylan Cease carries risk? How would you feel about giving him 5 years, $150 million? Great stuff, but it can go, like, his ERA was in the fours this year. So I keep talking myself into the Brewers re-signing Brandon Woodruff, especially if you're going to trade Freddie Peralta. I think his presence is super important. I know his presence is super important for a guy like Jacob Mizorowski, who has all the potential, all the stuff in the world, but kind of needs that veteran there to, like, guide him along and you know, to show him how the day-to-day routine and the mental side of it works as well. So I think I just talked myself into it on air.
I've already been talked into it. I'm ready for it. You're right. If they trade Peralta and Brandon Woodruff doesn't come back, this rotation is barely, as you look at it now, a postseason rotation. Now you also say to yourself, well, the Milwaukee Brewers can make pitchers appear out of thin air. They made Quinn Priester appear out of thin air. Their relievers largely out of thin air. You know, Jacob Mizorowski could be your ace, maybe. I think that's a dicey proposition, but if you don't think of him as, you know, if you don't think of guys structured as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you could get a rotation out of Quinn Priester, Jacob Mizorowski, Logan Henderson, and a couple other guys, you know, a couple veterans or guys that are in the organization now. You could maybe make that work. But yeah, it starts to get thin fast for a team that had all the pitching depth in the world this year, I thought, and then you got to the postseason and suddenly it was bullpen games, you know, and maybe that's even a reason to not bring Brandon Woodruff back, because you can't rely on him getting through a full season and being available in the postseason. Or maybe you don't work him very hard in the regular season, like the Dodgers did with a guy like Blake Snell or Shohei Ohtani, because of various injury things, and you get a full-fledged pitcher by the postseason. I don't know. But here, I go ahead.
Here's what I'll say about the health. Who was the Brewers pitcher that rubber armed the most this year?
Aaron Ashby.
He's coming off shoulder surgery. That's right. 23 he had it. And so, you know, not only has Woodruff spoken frequently, like whether we're just chatting with him or he's, you know, giving interviews about how like this year was about getting healthy and pitching in the big leagues again and like getting that feel back. He wanted to finish the year healthy too. That was what it was about, which was kind of the bummer. But next year is about getting the stuff all the way back. And Aaron Ashby's stuff was all the way back, and he pitched an incredible amount of innings. And he asked to pitch those innings. Maybe they should have diminished the workload a little bit, but he was demanding the work because he felt good. So if that is your, I know shoulder surgeries are not, it's not that simple, but that certainly makes you feel better when you head into this next season. Otherwise you're like, I don't know. I feel like you're swimming in the Cody Ponce waters, which is those are some interesting waters to swim in, I think.
Well,
he throws hard.
Former Brewers farmhand, Cody Ponce. I think ultimately we might have to, at some point, I don't know if this is the podcast for it, look at the overseas talent market. That might be a place where the Brewers can actually swim because there's just Cody Ponce. So few guys. yes, I know. Cody Ponce would be included in that. I'm just saying, like, there's so few free agents that I think would be attractive to the Brewers. It's either top end guys that they're going to be out on or old dudes. Like there's just very little middle ground. There's just not a lot of guys like Brandon Woodruff, those middle ground guys. And I think actually you're going to have 20 teams. Now that's obviously an overstatement, but that will be like somewhat in play for Brandon Woodruff, you know, because he isn't going to break the bank, but he could be what, as you're describing, a guy who is just prime for a really, really good season to get himself all the way back. You're going to have a lot of teams that are like, well, we can do 372 or 365. Like, I don't know what that ultimately looks like, but at the very least they should offer the QO. That's all I'm saying. But that'll,
yeah. 372. The Brewers are not matching that on multiple levels. I don't think they're not going to do the years, and they're probably not going to do the 24 mil a year too. So
right. One other interesting roster call, and I think I feel pretty strongly that Andrew Vaughn is going to be tendered a contract and brought back. He's eligible for arbitration, and he could make up to $8 million, I would say, if you use the MLB trade rumors projections, maybe even between 7 and 8, if you want to say that would be a top five earning player on last year's roster. That's pretty high for a guy who probably isn't going to be strictly an everyday player because he'll be in a platoon of some sort with Jake Bowers. I don't know if it'll be a straight platoon. If they pay him $8 million, I don't know if it can be a straight platoon because Vaughn would be only playing every once in a while against left-handed pitching, and I don't think that's what they're planning on. Jake Bowers did so well at the end of the year and showed up in the postseason like Vaughn did. He, of course, showed up in the postseason as well. And Bowers is a much more reasonable financial commitment that I think you're probably going to see him back for sure. And then the question is, would they actually bring Vaughn back? And I don't think it's 100% for sure. I think it's pretty dang likely. But I do think that's a little bit more of an interesting conversation than we know. What do you think on that front?
Well, here's what we know about the Brewers, right? Let's start with that.
They're poor.
They like Andrew Vaughn. We're getting there. They like Andrew Vaughn. They believe that Andrew Vaughn, what he did with them was not, again, not all smoke and mirrors.
Right.
And look at his Savant page. It'll back that up too.
Yeah, he was good. Legitimately good.
He was legitimately good. I mean, I'm writing about this now at the JS. He had a 707 OPS after mid-August on, when that stretch where he didn't homer to finish the season, starting with that series in Cincinnati till the end of the regular season, didn't homer, had a 707 OPS, which you're like, well, did he come crashing back down to earth? And that's normally when a guy is terrible, then heats up for a little bit and then doesn't homer again for 7 weeks. You're like, well, it was fun while it lasted. He's back to being the old player he was, but he wasn't. He was still a good hitter and an unlucky hitter who didn't hit home runs, but still hit the ball hard. So anyway, the Brewers do buy into a lot of what happened with Andrew Vaughn after he came over. They like him a lot. He's a good presence, not only in the lineup, in the clubhouse, and the meetings, all these sorts of things. The other things we know about the Brewers, JR, you said it, they are poor.
Poor.
And when you have a chance to pay, when you have a chance to trade or non-tender a first baseman set to make $8 million, who has been bad for
his whole career before now,
nine of the last 12 months. And like, you take out his 3 months with the Brewers, and for his career, he's like probably like a 95 OPS plus hitter, 90 OPS plus hitter ish.
Yeah, that's below
average. He had a 0.0 career F4 when the Brewers traded for him.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
No way.
So historically, like, even though you buy into a lot of what he did, all we know about baseball tells us, it slaps us in the face and be like, don't buy into this small sample. Don't buy into this. Not too much. And $8 million is like, this is not the Jake Bowers arbitration number. This is for the Brewers at first base, when you have other guys, AKA Jake Bowers, it's not an inconsequential amount of money. Ultimately though, I think you do it. I think you have to do it because that's what winning franchises do. You pay $8 million to this guy who is able to raise the ceiling of your offense, who hits home runs. You don't have too many guys who can hit home runs, and you go into next year with Bowers and Vaughn as your prototypical Brewers first base platoon, and like, expect 2.5 WAR from them. That's fine for the price, because what else are you going to get? Unless you trade for Jake Berger, like, you're not signing. Unless you want to sign Ty France. You want to sign Ty France? No. What you
want to
do?
I don't want to do that, actually. No.
He did win a gold glove, but that's the other thing about Andrew Vaughn too. JR, he was worth 5 outs above average with the Brewers last year. He was bad on defense before that, but right. 5 outs above average with the Brewers, that would have been, I think, tied for 5th in all of baseball among first basemen last year. He was very good defensively.
Doesn't that reinforce though? That's just like, that doesn't happen. Guys don't just arrive with a new team and suddenly I'm like, oh, I'm good at offense and defense now. I mean, that doesn't feel like I cannot trust that wholly, even though I'm sure the Brewers made some great tweaks with him, and yeah, maybe he did turn a corner. That's fantastic. But like, it just doesn't make sense to me, Kurt.
I agree. I agree with you. I agree with you. But and like, again, you can, when you view things from the Brewers lens and the lens in which they operate, you can absolutely see, like, if you just view everything the Brewers do as justified because it results in winning, like the end result is winning,
yeah,
then like, oh yeah, okay, you cut him for $8 million, you trade Freddie, that saved you $16 million, and then maybe you bring in Woodruff, and then it's relatively, you know, you come out relatively even, and you get some prospects back, or maybe you trade Vaughn too and get a player back. Like, that's not crazy talk, but like, the onus, the narrative has to shift at some point, right? It's got to shift at some point to Andrew Vaughn was good. If you believe that he is going to be good, like in a 115 OPS plus, 110 OPS plus, 2 WAR, that's good for your first baseman, then you just pay him $8 million. You just do it. And I think that's kind of where I fall, especially when I liked a lot of what Jake Bowers did down the stretch. If that's the player he is, then he's a good hitter. But you need some more, you need more options just in case he isn't, or just in case Vaughn isn't, vice versa, then you bring Bowers back. At least that's in my opinion, is when you have a chance to bring these guys back for less than what they would get on the open market, you do it.
I just looked it up because I have a vindictive streak in me, but if you added the two potential salaries for Freddie Peralta and Andrew Vaughn, that $16 million number that you just said, that would be tied for the 8th most expensive Dodger this year in the 2025. So the two of them together. And let's be clear, Freddie Peralta at $8 million, if you get the Freddie Peralta you got last year, that is a bargain on top of a bargain. And while $8 million for Andrew Vaughn might not be as much of a bargain, it would be if the production were matched from what you got.
Well, what's he getting on the open market? It's a multi-year deal, I'll tell you
that. It is. Yeah, well, I mean, that's the other thing, is like, you could see them going through the arbitration process and trading him. I mean, if they get a good somebody who's like desperate for a first baseman, like that's always still on the table. I mean, they're going to go to arbitrate. Like they'll go through the arbitration process with him. I can't imagine they don't tender him a contract, but man, is it wild that the Brewers have to think like this, that, you know, can they afford to keep Freddie Peralta and Andrew Vaughn next year when the Dodgers, that would be like a footnote for them. Very, very annoying. I'm still on the Dodgers thing. I'm not letting it go.
I was going to say you got to give this up, but you know,
I can't,
don't have to.
It's who I am now.
I'm going to let you have this. It's going to ruin your entire baseball watching experience. And that's okay. Like, I think you have accepted that deep down in your soul.
I am broken. And I just want to be clear. Like, this is born from seeing the Blue Jays take the Dodgers to a seventh game, to a crazy seven game series, to, you know, all these extra innings, and have people say, oh, see, it wasn't about the money. It was just about the fact that, you know, like either team could have won. The Blue Jays totally should have won. The Blue Jays totally should have won. That's true. And Miguel Rojas hit that home run, but they are not in that position if Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Shohei Ohtani do not exist. And there is one team and one team only that could have signed those two players. And that is an inherent advantage that the Dodgers will always have. And if those guys show up, the Brewers can't compete with that. That's all. I'm just, you know, that's my thesis statement.
I like this heel turn from you.
Well, it's not a heel turn.
You become the Joker.
We're going to talk about this on another pod, but like the work stoppage is coming and nobody wants that in a vacuum. Nobody wants to see baseball go down. Certainly not you and me personally. It's bad for our jobs.
Okay. Yes. But
if the only thing I care about is the Brewers winning a World Series, if that is a singular concern that I have, a singular issue that I vote upon, then the stoppage is good.
Well, I think single issue voters are stupid.
Maybe they are, but I might be stupid, but like, The chances for the Brewers to win a World Series hinge on a salary cap that restricts other teams' abilities to spend. Because I've already seen the Brewers who operate on a shoestring budget by comparison have about as much success as humanly possible. Like, they know how to do it. The only problem is that other teams, if they're clicking at their best and their guys are healthy, they will always be able to outperform because these guys are the bonus babies. So a salary cap would help the Brewers win a World Series.
So what you really need is more revenue sharing. A way for the Brewers to access more money and not be, that is what you need.
No, what I think I'm saying is I want other teams to spend less. And by other teams, I mean like the top four. yes, more money would be great. Obviously, I will. And they'll probably come up with that. It's not going to be a salary cap. It'll be some sort of enhanced revenue sharing thing that will ultimately save baseball in 2027. And I don't know, we can get into more of this. I'm still down bad. And I'm not having it where people are like, oh, well, Toronto, never mind the number five payroll in baseball, like the scrappy little team that almost shocked the Dodgers. Yeah. That system isn't working for the Milwaukee Brewers. Anyway, I want to talk about Coleman Crow. first, before we get to him, because I do want to talk about him.
Good Lord.
Are there any other tender or contract decisions still out there that you're curious about?
Yes, Wendy's.
Wendy's? Like
I've been seeing these Wendy's tendies commercials.
That sounds delightful.
I pride myself on being above the influence of advertisements for the most part, but I'm interested.
Where are you going for lunch today? I don't have lunch plans today.
I got to go pick up my child from 3K in a little bit here, and it's not far from Wendy's. So
every child loves tendies. Every child.
Maybe I have some leftover shrimp in the fridge. No, I think that's pretty much it for the tender decisions. I mean, there's a couple on there that maybe they could move on from, but the thing about the Brewers offseason is aside from Woodruff and maybe Andrew Vaughn and then the Freddie Peralta trade, it's pretty straightforward. Even the Rule 5 stuff is straightforward.
I bet you they dig into the Rule 5 draft again. They did that with this past season with Connor Thomas. I mean, this is essentially what they do when they bring in guys like Anthony Siegler and Blake Perkins and find value there. Like, they find guys that are way off the radar and turn those into credible big leaguers. Now your mileage may vary on what you've seen from Siegler so far, but there's still some intrigue there, whether you like it or not. And I could see them doing the Rule 5 thing again. I mean, that's just kind of where they find sort of their edge.
Matt Arnold seems to really like the Rule 5. Stearns was kind of out on it. Council was out on it too. I don't know if they do it though. It will not be another Connor Thomas. That was a head scratch.
Not an older like reliever is what you mean.
Yeah.
No, somebody with a little more upside probably. Coleman Crowe added to the 40-man roster. He is an intriguing prospect. He was acquired in the deal, you'll recall, that sent Adrian Hauser and Tyrone Taylor back over to the Mets several years ago before, was that after the 23 season it would have been. He was injured at the time. He's been injured lately. He didn't finish the season on an active roster. Maybe he did. I'm not sure how that terminology works, but he was hurt at the end of the year. But he is super interesting, and I want to know more about him. I also want to know if there's anybody else you see that is a decision for the 40-man. I believe it's at 38 guys right now. That's pretty standard for this point in the offseason. If there are other guys who you think could be exposed to the Rule 5 or guys that they might want to consider adding, I don't think so. I think this is it. Tell me about Coleman Crowe.
Coleman Crowe's fun because he throws a lot of curveballs and then has that riding four seam that plays from like a, you know, he's not a big guy and he throws from a, it's similar to Logan Henderson's basically in velo and in kind of the metrics too. So that's what you need to know about Coleman Crowe. There's a deeper mix in there too. He's not just a two pitch guy, but he does have two primarily good pitches. I'm interested to see how well he can live with that fastball when it's, you know, 91 to 93 in the big leagues. But this is definitely a guy. This was the only must add of the group because he's absolutely someone that you could see cracking the rotation at some point and being a depth piece next year. Or
he'll pitch in 26.
Maybe a bullpen guy. Maybe even a bullpen guy. I'm not sure where he ultimately winds up, but look, it's pretty solid command. It's one plus pitch and then kind of just makes do with a bunch of other stuff. I think the cutter's kind of interesting too, so maybe that's a league average one. And the Brewers have done more with a lot less, so he didn't pitch much because of injuries, and who knows how much that'll affect, you know, like the injuries are going to be a part of his story going forward. But yeah, I've liked the arm ever since they traded for him. We haven't gotten to see much of the arm because of the injuries, but what we did see at Biloxi last year was fantastic.
If I'm looking at, you know, the two debuts that I'm really looking forward to in 2026, it's Jefferson Caro, who's tearing it up in the Venezuelan League, a nice supplement to his sort of injury abbreviated 2025 season after losing all of 2024. He looks great. And I know he's going to be there in 26 at some point, although I guess I don't know for sure if they'll start the season with him or if they'll sign a veteran backup and let Caro ease into it and get, you know, continue to get reps at AAA. And Crowe, I think, is the other guy who has not made his major league debut yet, who I think is going to be a big time, you know, potentially big time player for the Brewers in 2026. I don't think there's anybody else who's going to be added to the 40 man. I don't think there's really even anybody there in danger of losing, like a Shane Smith type, who of course was the first pick in the Rule 5 draft last year. I don't think there's anybody on the radar that's like, this guy, they're really playing with fire and he could be a big league contributor right out of the gate for some other team if they don't add him. I don't think there's any decision like that. It certainly worked out last year when they made those 40 man moves, bringing Chad Patrick and Logan Henderson into the fold. Didn't do Shane Smith. Maybe it kind of burned them, but like I still think they made the right calls there.
This is sort of the byproduct of the not great 22 draft.
Yes,
it's Miz and then
no one else.
Luke Adams, but he's not Rule 5 eligible.
No, he's also very exciting.
Yeah, I think Matt Wood is an interesting player. I don't know if like he's not ranked anywhere. I don't have him ranked, but I could definitely see Matt Wood being a big league catcher. But I don't see him being taken in the Rule 5 draft or anything like that. So then you can kind of get away with that a little more with the position players. Like if there were pitchers on here that I was certain are future big leaguers, then yeah, you probably want to, like, especially if they have Shane Smith stuff, potential stuff. Yeah. You protect them. And the other thing to consider too, JR, the 2023 draft lot of guys to protect. A lot of guys.
Those are my people. You know, I'm like, a big fan.
Let's look up the list. I'm going to make you happy and just read you the Brewers 2020. Take
Keener's name
has to be protected. All right. Yes. Brock Wilkin.
Yeah. We'll see if he has to be protected. I'm not sure. Bishop Letson is on that list. Bishop.
Yeah. But he's another high schooler. So
that's true. That's true.
Get another year. Same with Noth. Same
Mike with Bovey. I don't think
Bovey.
You know, I don't, yep.
That'll be an interesting call. Depends on how his year goes.
Right.
Oh, Jason Woodward, man. I wish that guy could stay healthy. We'll see I think he'll be back this year, but that guy's got some nasty stuff.
Yes. Obviously, Cooper Pratt and Eric Batanti are in this mix. Cooper Pratt, will he make his debut in 2026? That's still something I think we...
Yeah, Cooper Pratt ain't going to need to be protected because he's going to be on the roster.
I think that's probably right. But Batanti's going to be a curious one. Ryan Burchard, another injury guy. You know, Yoho is already here.
Tate Keener
has... Brett Witrowski, Josh Adam Chesky.
Witrowski is going to get protected, yep.
Adam Chesky had a phenomenal, I mean, he's a high school guy, so not quite the same thing we're talking about, but has had a phenomenal Arizona Fall League experience playing in the outfield. So that's somebody who's definitely someone that should be on the long-term radar. What's going on with our guy Bjorn? What's happening with Bjorn Johnson?
You can go watch him in Appleton this year.
Let's do it. Let's
see if he's throwing enough strikes.
You and me, we're going to go watch Bjorn. Your daughter can come with us. We'll get some Wendy's tendies on the way there.
Yes.
It's going to be a great time. We're going to have
Wisconsin's going to have a fun team this year.
I know. Although Jesus Mate will not be on it.
No, he will not. Jesus Mate will be, he will be doing things that make Javik Blake lose his mind on the microphone.
In Biloxi. Yeah. That's a guy who might actually be with the Brewers in 2027. I am, I'm going to start making plans. Luis Peña though.
Will be back. Yep.
Are there any free agents, Kurt, that strike your fancy? And
I don't do this game, Jay. You know this. I don't do this game.
I know you don't. The Brewers don't do this game, which is why we unfortunately cannot participate nearly to the level we'd like to. Although I went back and read our proposed trade deadline story, like where we were making propositions for, oh, they should trade for this guy, and you know, like we were playing GM, approving and denying. I'm like, this is fun, we should do that more often. I enjoyed that, even though it was all make-believe fantasy land. But is there what about a position? Because I think we're kind of all on the same page that Joey Ortiz is probably going to be the shortstop again in 2026, at least to start with. Their roster is pretty settled. I don't know if there is an obvious, well, there's certainly not an obvious move. Is there a potential way that they go get a third baseman, whether it be trade or free agency, and move pieces on the diamond around? Durbin to second, Terang to short, or do they get an out, you know, do they need an outfielder? Do they need a starting pitcher? Like what do you think the priorities are going to be? Their priorities are going to be to save money and not make moves.
Look, maybe they'll surprise us. Our job here is to prepare you for the most likely outcomes so that you do not spend another offseason. And by the way, I'm gonna do this in spring training too. Nothing matters. I'm gonna remind you, just like
what Vinny Capper's amazing.
Just wait till April and the Brewers will be fine. All right. That's what our primary job here is, JR. At least I think that's what it is.
I have decided my primary job is also to hate the fact that the Dodgers have $350 million to spend. Yes.
I don't know how you survived this long as a baseball fan.
I don't know. It's like one of those, it's like when somebody points out a noise that you hadn't previously clocked, and then that's the only thing you can hear, and it drives you crazy, like somebody chewing really loudly, or just like a car alarm going off in the background. Previously, I just was a little bit oblivious because the Brewers were not, you know, I didn't feel like the Brewers needed to be contending for a World Series every single year. I felt like they needed to be contending to be like one of the better teams and a playoff contender and things like that. But now that I have seen the enemy up close and know that they couldn't have done anything to financially even come close, now it's all I think about. It's all I think about.
I will at least give you this. If you look at the fact that Kyle Tucker is like, we're going to the offseason, everyone is like, oh yeah, he's a Dodger.
Yep, he's a Dodger.
If you don't look at that and at least are at least able to go, Yeah, I could see why people would not like this system. I could see why that would be irksome to fans in Milwaukee. And like I don't know, people try to point Pittsburgh like, well, you can't be mad because your owner doesn't spend. That's fair. But Milwaukee, they at least try a little bit.
They do. That's the frustration. It's that Milwaukee does try. They've done it. They're successful. They're good at it. And now they're up against the thing that they can't control.
Like, at least I would appreciate some acknowledgement of at least of like why that would people would not enjoy that system. Anyway, where were we? Oh, free agents. So here's my roundabout answer to your question from 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Is my answer, my roundabout answer is a roundabout answer from the season end press conference that the Brewers held, where I asked Matt Arnold if, hey, look, you guys, you know, had a longer playoff run. You get all the money from the previous rounds, all these games, that extra revenue. Do you have any inkling idea if that's going to be able to be invested back into team payroll? And the answer was essentially that there was no answer. The answer was that, you know, it was the old, well, we got all the support we need from Mark. Mark flew back to Milwaukee and said thank you personally to all the employees, which is a very nice thing of him to do, but doesn't answer the question at hand of are you going to be able to spend more money this offseason? Like, are you going to have the freedom to be able to do that? So I think we kind of got our answer.
Great. Real exciting.
Maybe, maybe not. You know, we don't know for sure, but.
Yeah. I mean, I went back to this in 2019 after they went to the NLCS last time, they come back and they sign Yasmani Grandal and Mike Moustakas. Yep. I don't know if that's like they're two connected things, but like they addressed some of their biggest issues in free agency. And they were able to, I mean, they were still a good team in 2019. I mean, they weren't as good as 2018, but they were still a very quality team, went to the playoffs and had a good team. They had a good team.
A couple differences between then and now is their payroll was low. Like their base payroll was lower to begin that season, I believe, than it is right now. Mm-hmm. And it's not like they went out and got those guys, respectfully.
No, that's true. That's true.
They fell into their laps and they were advantageous and like, here's a nice, hefty 1 year deal. And then you can try to parlay that into more. And I believe they both did. They both did.
They did. That's correct. No, you're absolutely right. Their market was softer than they expected. So the Brewers pounced at an opportunity. I don't feel like they even pounce on opportunities. I don't feel like they even jump in when, like, oh, the guy's price is down. It's more like a Jose Quintana situation. Oh, the guy has no other options and we're going to grind it down to the last second before the season starts and pay him $4 million so late in the game that he isn't even ready by opening day. Like, that's a commitment to the bit, man. We are just not going to spend one penny over what we think a guy is worth. And I mean, again, this system works for them. They do the job. The Brewers need to spend more situation. I think you could make that argument, but like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying they do everything they can correctly because they just won 97 games with a roster that not just me, nobody thought was going to win 97 games. They've pulled it off, but they're still a ceiling because they still can't outspend the big boys. And they can't prove themselves.
Do you think one day in spring training, I just need to get Murph's like how many games he thinks they're going to win on the record? I feel like that would be helpful for down the road.
So that he can't come back and like, say, well, all y'all thought we weren't going to win any.
When we hear nobody had us winning more than 82 games. Like, well, what did you have?
Watch him.
What you got? Let me see.
Truth serum. And it's like, I don't know, 79.
Open up the keg. Let me see what the internal projections say.
What else, Kurt? You got to get going soon. What else should we be thinking about discussing as the offseason begins in earnest? We're here. Guys can sign with teams now. We've reached.
So here's what we're gonna do this offseason, right? Here's the boat that I'm rowing. Actually, I'm not the one rowing. I'm the coxswain. Coxswain.
That's not a term I'm gonna use. I'm sorry.
Sorry, guess you don't know rowing then.
No, I know it. It's just a word. I'm not comfortable. I'm sorry.
Don't be afraid to say it. Coxswain.
Captain or rower.
That's what I'm
doing. I'm a little too big to be that though. Like those are like, that's like the 5 foot six guy.
But don't you need to be tall to be anybody else?
To be the rower. Yes. You know, okay, I did rowing. I did crew for a month at Wisconsin.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, you did, man.
Improv, comedy, and crew.
Yep. I was a D1 athlete for a month.
That's amazing.
I survived one round of cuts, and then I was not going to survive the next round of cuts. And I was like, I don't actually like this.
Wisconsin famous for recruiting just tall, good athletic.
Oh no, that's kids. Well, I wouldn't say good athletic guys. They tall and did tall. You play sports?
You oh, did you're, play sports.
I did, and I'm tall. I am relatively tall. I'll just also relatively not tall because relative, obviously, I'm not relatively tall to NBA players. Anyway, JR. I'm going to be the coxswain here of this boat.
Stop saying that word. Okay.
The Brewers have no excuse if they do not improve this team using financial means this offseason. No excuse.
Let's go.
You cannot open your season end press conference, literally open it by thanking the fans for being the difference in the NLDS games 1, 2, and 5. And then not reward that the financial benefit of their support with something to, you know, improve the team. However, we are also going to be patient. We're not going to rush to things if it's January 10th and the Brewers haven't signed a free agent. We'll let this play out. We will let this play out. But that's where I'm putting my flag, and more importantly, I'm putting my oar.
Well, you won't be impatient, but by January 10th, let me tell you, some people will be impatient. This is going to be arduous, but this is how every offseason works. They find those bargains that kind of trickle in after guys don't get the stupid money right up front, and sometimes there's some benefits, some goodbyes on the open market. Last year they didn't even investigate those. This is a year where it could be a trade though, because Freddie Peralta is, you know, certainly interesting, a trade candidate. I'm still torn on what they're going to do there. Every day I wake up and I'm like, well, they can't trade him. Their rotation would be just devoid of anybody who can be a postseason difference maker, except maybe Jacob Mizorowski and Quinn Priester, maybe. But then I'm like, no, they have to trade him. They're just going to. That's how they operate. So I don't even know. I'm going to go back and forth on that until we get some resolution there. Kurt, I think that's it.
It's coxswain.
What is?
That's how you pronounce it. Coxswain. The W is like silent, apparently.
Really?
Memory holds this.
How did you not know this as a Division I athlete?
I was for a month, and I wasn't a coxswain.
Stop. I don't like that word either. I'm not into it.
I was the rower, man.
Does that mean you were crew? Isn't that the terminology? Your crew? Or that's no, yeah, no. That's if you're sailing, right?
I was crew, yes.
Okay. I meant like the actual position. The rower is called something, which I thought was crew, but I think that has to do with sailing and not rowing. I don't know, dude. Skipper and crew. That's a sailing thing. We will continue to do these updates as news breaks. There's probably more that's going to be coming in the short term with all these roster decisions. We'll see if that actually, if there's any surprises. And then of course there will be things like the winter meetings in December, you know, the Rule 5 draft. There'll be things to talk about. Kurt, thank you for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Of course.
We'll do this again. Thanks for listening to Microbrew. Find everything Kurt has at jsonline.com. We will talk to you again real soon. Bye, everybody.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.